Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 9th. I thought we'd kick off today in Asia, where Australia was down about 129 points. It's broken its sequence of higher reaction lows, but only just. And we're certainly seeing a little bit of reticence to push the index back above the trend mean. It's been messing around in this level now for over 3 months. So it's important to think about, well, why is the index pulling back? Well, when we then think about the outlook, well, the Australian dollar has been resurgent. It has also been trading above the trend mean. It's broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. So part of the reason why the nominal index has been going sideways has been the strength of the currency. But it does look like this is on a clear recovery trajectory. So then we also should be thinking about commodities. The commodity sector was larger than the banks, or at least as large as the banks, back at the top of the commodity bull market, but that's no longer true. But one important point is that the resources sector is back above its trend mean. Now, it still hasn't been able to push above the 5,000 level and recoup the entire decline from earlier this year. But it does look increasingly likely that commodities are going to be an important factor in the recovery for the global economy. And the continuous commodity index hasn't quite broken out to new recovery highs, but it's consolidating nicely above the 400 point level. And 400 points had been an area of support all the way back from 2016. It's a normal area where we might anticipate some pause in consolidation, but certainly there isn't anything so far in the way of a meaningful resistance, and there's clear scope for commodities to continue to do well. Of course, when we think about commodities, then Brent crude is one of the things that people pay closest attention to. The price has steadied around the $40 level. So that's a normal area where people might anticipate some support. We also have a contango. So the November contract is trading around 40, and then you go all the way out to September and it's trading at 44. So there's no near-term supply deficit. But the reality here is that in a global recovery scenario, then it's likely that we will have more consumption, and that will chip away at the global supply surfeit in the near term. I think it's unlikely that we're going to go back down to the 20 level unless the entire global economy were to shut down again, and I do think that that is particularly unlikely. Well, if oil prices aren't leading on the upside, then something else must be. Well, gold is certainly a candidate there. It's firming again from $1,900. This is very encouraging action. And that it has so far been able to limit the size of the pullback to something that's really quite modest, only really a little bit more than 10%. And considering that that was from a peak to a trough. In fact, the consolidation is somewhat smaller than that. But gold is firming from the $1,900 level. Silver prices were also a little steadier in here. Now, when we think about the outperformance of the precious metals, then we should also think about the industrial resources. And copper prices, having pulled back yesterday, recoup some of the decline in here, but continuing to hold the $3 level. There's a clear upward bias to trading, and this is another instance where we have clearly broken the downtrend, and this downtrend is more than 2 years old. So this, I think, is additionally encouraging. Well, there is the additional potential that we're going to see a great deal of infrastructure built, not just with demand for copper improving, but for all industrial resources as well. But then where is that infrastructure likely to be built? Well, I think that once we get through this scare with the coronavirus, then we're going to see emerging markets starting to pick up and really rally more meaningfully. there is a clear correlation over time between the outlook for emerging markets and gold. So gold prices have already ran on the upside, but emerging markets haven't done quite as well. So when we look at a number of the ASEAN stock market indices, they're right in the region of their respective trend means, and they have been easing back over the last few days. There's still a sequence of higher reaction lows, for example, when we look at Indonesia. And Indonesia also has government bond yields that are really quite attractive in the order of about 6%. Then the Indonesian rupiah has really rallied quite impressively from its lows back in March, April. And while it's been easing over the last few months, then the easing has been pretty modest. So the big question then is when we think about the wider ASEAN market, what is this more commonality, or are we going to see these downtrends broken? And Malaysia is at an interesting juncture. It's right in the region of the trend mean. It hasn't quite been able to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment yet, but if it can sustain this move above the 1500 point level, well, then we can start talking about a higher reaction low, that it will have broken the sequence of lower rally highs from the peak back in 2018, and that there is some restitution, or I guess there is the ability to just get past the enormous market upset from the 1MDB scandal. Then, when we think about Thailand, it is also back below the trend mean, and it really does need to demonstrate that it can put in a higher reaction low. Vietnam is also above its trend mean, so there are a really quite small number of markets that have been able to push back above that 200-day moving average, but of course, then it also needs to hold it. There is still a lot of uncertainty about the vaccines, about the outlook for markets. I think perhaps the two most important factors for emerging markets are going to be the rollout of a vaccine and the really, I guess, giving investors confidence that if they put their money into a country, that they'll be able to get it back at some point in the future. That the potential returns won't be ethereal, and that they have some confidence that countries are going to be able to get on top of the massive challenges that trying to contain the spread of this virus have represented for their economies. So that's very much tied to the outlook for vaccines. And then, on the other hand, there's the dollar. And when we look at the Asia Dollar Index, it's also almost on the cusp of breaking out. So we've seen a number of these Asian markets that haven't quite been able to break progressions of lower rally highs. And that's equally true of the Asia Dollar Index. If the Asia Dollar Index can sustain a move back above 100, then we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. And that will likely be a bullish catalyst for the wider Asian region. And of course, a big determinant in whether that's possible is going to be the renminbi. And the renminbi did strengthen again in here today. So it does look like China is willing to allow the renminbi to appreciate versus the dollar. But what that also does is it takes some of the pressure off of countries in the region that compete against it. Well, right now there is r rather significant competition between China and India on their borders. The Nifty index was in negative territory today, but it's still above its trend mean, so it's one of the small number of indices that have been able to recoup almost all of the big decline. I think it's also particularly relevant to keep an eye on the BSE 500. You get a lot more small caps in there. And that index had really lost momentum at the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018. It really put in a lengthy range, failed upside break above 16,000, then massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So we've had a very impressive rebound. And The Indian rupee has strengthened through its 200-day moving average as well, and it was also firmer in here today. In fact, when we look at other markets like the Brazilian real, which has been really acutely weak in the early part of this year, well, then we are seeing at least some evidence that it is strengthening. The South African rand, and every article I've seen with regard to South Africa is talking about just how profound the economic contraction is, but the rand strengthened really quite impressively in here today, and in fact, it's stronger, or it has strengthened through the 200-day moving average against some weaker currencies, but even against a somewhat stronger currency like the euro, then it was also firmer in here today as well. So we're seeing that commodity-related currencies right across the board are rallying. That's as true of it as of the rand or the real as it is for the Aussie dollar or the Canadian dollar. And then Russia has been increasing their supply of gold, and the ruble has also begun to put in perhaps a higher reaction low as well, although there is still a sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 3 months for the dollar. So there's some work to be done by the ruble. But if this is a medium-term peak for the US dollar, then it should act as a catalyst for both commodities and emerging markets. But of course, we're going to have to see significant new demand growth for infrastructure plays, and there is the potential that India itself is going to be a significant area of infrastructure development. The Mumbai New Delhi economic corridor represents a massive infrastructure project that India is gearing up towards. Then, of course, there's the potential for significant infrastructure development right across Europe and the USA to get people back to work and also to replace antiquated pieces of road and bridge and dams that have decayed over years of neglect. Then, when we think about what's going on in developed markets, well, the Japanese index is right around the region of 23,000, the Nikkei. That's below the 24,000 level, which is the upper side of the range over the last 2.5 years. If it can sustain a move above 24,000, well, then we really are in a medium-term demand-dominated environment, and all of this ranging over the last 2.5 years will be a first step above the base. And the issue, of course, with looking at Japan is that you need to look at about 40 years of data to get some perspective. That's equally true of the breakout that we've seen in the Taiwanese market, where it has just about finally pushed on to new high ground compared to the peak set back in early 1990. So these are incredibly lengthy ranges that have evolved in these markets, and they just look to be on the right at the beginning of new significant bull markets. Then, when we think about the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index in the USA, well, it did rally in here today, although not in an especially dynamic manner. This is the biggest pullback we've seen since the beginning of this rebound in March. So it's an inconsistency. If the low holds, then it's a minor inconsistency. I do think that the 2000 level is more important, considering it's the region of the previous peak from back in January and February, and by the time the index gets there, it'll be in the region of the 200-day moving average. The Nasdaq 100 also rallied impressively in here today and is holding the 11,000 level and the sequence of higher reaction lows and the upper side of the most recent short-term range. It still has really quite a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, so we may see some additional to and fro, but the there isn't anything to really question that this isn't still a recovery scenario. Then when we go back and think about what's going on in Europe, the brinksmanship that the UK is engaging in with the EU is unsettling for sentiment, but the weakness of the pound yesterday has helped to, I think, stimulate some interest in UK equities. The FTSE 100 was in positive territory in here today, and it was particularly interesting that AstraZeneca, which is the largest constituent of the FTSE 100, was also in positive territory following the news that it has paused its trial of its vaccine candidate with Oxford University. The Financial Times ran with a story early this morning saying that they may restart the trial next week. But the fact that AstraZeneca is back in the region of the trend mean, and the fact that the NASDAQ biotech index has bounced from the region of the trend mean in here today, that suggests that this doesn't look like a terminal damage to the recovery, but rather that it's just a reversion to the mean in a wider medium-term bull market environment. This is a massive proof of concept trial for the healthcare sector. The reason that we've had viable potential solutions brought forward in about 10 months is because it is completely revolutionary technology. The evolution of genetics has been astounding over the course of the last 20 years. There is the clear potential that we're being presented with opportunity and with solutions that were beyond our grasp only 5 years ago. So it's really quite an incredibly enthusiastic environment, but it needs to be proved in the wider context. We need broad spectrum data across genders, races, and various age groups to give us a very clear understanding of what works and what needs to be improved upon and what needs to be dispensed with. And that is time consuming. There are enormous efforts underway to test viable solutions. There are 150 plus vaccine candidates. So we only need one, but there is the potential that we're going to have many, and that is likely to represent a very clear bullish phenomenon for the biotech sector overall. And I think that once we do get past that, and we do get vaccines into the market, then we're going to get a very swift recovery in terms of economic activity. One thing I think is interesting is that there is a lot of back and forth in the bond markets right now. The 10-year yield was up a couple of basis points in here today. It was down a few yesterday. It continues to hold the 50 basis point level. When we then look at the yield curve spread, we've been told repeatedly that the Federal Reserve is not engaged in yield curve control. But in order to completely dispel any suggestion that they are in fact doing that, this spread would need to sustain a move above 70 basis points. I just don't see the Fed allowing that to happen. They cannot really tolerate a long bond yield above 2%. What that would do to the ability of the US government to fund its operations, and the massive increase in interest rate expense that that would represent, that's something that is going to be rather difficult to, it's going to have a very significant impact on government finances. It would then bring forward the question about exactly what will the Federal Reserve do when the government runs out of money. Well, the logical answer is they're just going to print it. And that is likely to put additional downward pressure on the US dollar, because the USA is much more aggressive in devaluing its currency than just about anywhere else. So while we're still in the starting blocks for emerging markets, the conditions are being set up for significant outperformance of emerging markets relative to developed markets over the course of the next few years. But we may not really get the starting gun until Asian currencies have clearly broken their downtrends and we also have greater visibility on what a vaccine is going to look like. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.